Devil's House.
I'm going fishing. I'm going fishing. Hook, sinker, and line.
Oh, yes, indeed. Oh, man, am I feeling rough today. But I was actually construction working on a personal project for once. I mean, we've doubled the size of our store. Fish and Frank here, by the way. But I figured you guys knew that with the whole fish thing. But we've been working and, you know, we doubled the size of the store. We've just got done with the drawings, plans for the seminar area. We start that tomorrow. We're going to be able to seat 48 people comfortably, more in some chairs and stuff. We're going to start getting the seminar area built. That starts tomorrow. But today I actually got to work on my music room. I'm old guitar player. Well, actually, I'm a bass player. Like playing guitar. I like playing drums. But I've been looking for a place to practice. Well, I finally found one, and we started working on that today. So I'm all covered in dust and grunge and here, just having an exciting time, trying to keep eyes open, working on a radio show. So anyway, this is Fish and Frank's and We're a Radio Show. Me here, the blind tarpon across from me, Robert. We've got Captain Morris Campbell, your best bet for your 10-pound bass. If you've been dying to catch that 10-pounder, Captain Morris Campbell is the guy who's most likely to make that happen, at least get you really close. But I'd say you got about an 80% chance of breaking 10. And we have RJ in the control panels, the control booth. What's your week like, RJ?
I'm hooked up to a neurostimulator right now. And so I'm kind of really jerky behind the microphone. Yeah. So there's buzzes you hear in the background. It's just me getting better.
I just thought the show was going good.
Yeah. There's a buzz about this show. No, that's just RJ's electromagnetical muscle corrections. You know, didn't they used to, like, people in insane asylums, they used to put the electricity through them?
Yeah, they tell me if I connect this to my temples, the same thing will happen.
Okay, and it's not. Huh? It's actually for your back?
Yeah, it's for my back.
Yeah, liar. Okay, never mind. I didn't say that. Okay.
And I'm sure there's other things you can hook it up to, too, but I'm not about to try it.
Come on, that's usually me. What are you doing?
I've been hanging out with you too long, Frank.
He's playing my sticker.
Look at this. The influence has rubbed off.
Oh, man. We've been hanging out too long, RJ.
That's right.
Too long. Speaking of hanging out a long time, Spanish mackerel, Robert, blind tarpon guy there, Spanish mackerel, talk about fish.
There's a lot of schools of them out there off the beaches, and they're starting to move into the lower harbor, basically from Boca Grande all the way up through Cape Hayes. So, you know, there's a good variety of stuff that you can do to fish for them. You don't need a giant boat. You don't need to go a long ways offshore. You know, it's just plain old spoon really is all you need. You can either cast it or troll it. You know,
spoon, a gotcha, a crazy jig,
yeah,
something moving through the water,
something wiggling,
yeah, moving through the water, preferably kind of quick.
A bottle cap with a hook in, it'll work just fine.
So, is there a place you could drive to on a beach? Any beach you know of? Nokomis, Gasparilla,
yeah,
Englewood,
the Venice jetties for sure. They've been getting them off of there, the Venice pier, and then also down at Boca Grande itself.
How about the one there on the intercoastal at Englewood, the Anger Pier?
The Anger Pier? I haven't heard of much at all the last couple days there.
You'd probably be better off with a bobber and a shrimp or something.
Yeah, probably.
Get more of a mixed bag.
Yeah, that would definitely be your better bet.
You would like to go to a nicer place to fish than the Anger Pier.
No, I don't know. The Anger Pier, it's got an attitude. It's an angry pier, Anger Pier. It's right next to Beach Road. If you're going to Englewood Beach, before you go over the bridge onto the, you know, Barrier Island there, just, it's right there on the left side. Actually, pretty nice pier. What's Placida doing? Anything?
Placida's getting a mixed bag of stuff. They are getting a few Spanish mackerel here and there, but it hasn't been super consistent, but it's definitely a possibility. I forgot about that one, but sheep's head have started moving in there. There's been a few flounder, some mangrove snapper. You know, it's been a pretty decent spot overall, and since they've repaved that walkway going out to it and rebuilt the pier, it's pretty easy access.
Better for wheelchairs.
Wheelchairs, walkers.
Carts, you know, yeah. If you're dragging your stuff with you on a cart, it's a lot nicer walk. It's still a little bit of a walk.
Oh, absolutely.
It's definitely a walk, but
absolutely.
At least it's a better surface walk.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not like you're off-roading anymore.
So, on the way up, we're driving up, and, you know, we come up from Fishing Franks in Port Charlotte, and we take Edgewater around some of the other roads. And we're going down Collingswood, and there's a whole bunch of buzzards there. Now, buzzards are very common in Southwest Florida. And while everybody thinks they're icky and they're ugly and all that, they're really kind of like save us a lot of money. Because if the buzzards go out after the roadkill, nobody's got to, you don't have to pay somebody to go clean up this mess out there. They're nature's, you know, amazing janitors.
Yeah.
They were enjoying that possum on the half shell, weren't they?
That was an armadillo, wasn't it?
It's called possum on the half shell.
Oh, possum on the half shell is an armadillo. Okay. I don't speak quite enough Southern yet after 40-some years. All right. Possum on the half shell, that's an armadillo. Yeah, they were. But it got me thinking. And I think buzzards are one of the smarter birds out there. I mean, either that or they really just don't care. One way or another, because every other bird, like take a dove. It sits there. You get really close to it. You're going to drive around it. You know, you're in your lane. You go to the other lane to pass and go around it, and it flies off. A buzzard, as soon as he sees you starting to shift lane, I'm good right here. And he just keeps right on eating. They, you know, I guess maybe they got to wait for their food. They say, this is it. Or they look and go, okay, he's going around me. I don't know. I was trying to figure that out. Are they, like, really smart or just really, I don't know, like, hey, screw you. You know, I'm eating here. You know,
That's
do they
right.
got that? Hey, I'm here, go around attitude. Or are they just pretty smart and look to go around? I don't know.
I think part of it is maybe they just don't care. But the other part of it is that they can't fly very well. They glide unbelievably well, but they're a very heavy-bodied bird. And not that their bones are really necessarily more dense, but they gorge themselves to the point where they can't fly off quickly. So that's why you'll always see them skip off to the side of
hop.
The road.
And doing the bunny hop, you know, you think you're at a wedding reception, watch the buzzards hop off the side.
Exactly. And what I just learned recently is that they spend about 50% of their time walking.
Really?
Than they do flying, yeah. You know, and it's pretty strange, but, you know, it's not uncommon to see a buzzard literally walking down a road or a ditch or something, and it's just kind of their way of getting around.
I've seen some driving down 41 lately.
Yeah.
You've seen some buzzards driving down 41?
Yeah. The thing I don't understand.
I don't know. RJ, you, what am I going to do here? I'm going to be out of a job.
Speaking of buzzards.
Yes.
Ever seen one nest?
I don't know. You mean in the building of a nest?
No, nest. Yeah, a buzzard nest. Ever seen one nesting? We see all the other birds of prey and their relatives nesting all the time, but how about a buzzard?
I see them roosting all the time.
Yeah,
I mean,
how
I see
about
them in
nesting?
Trees and stuff, but I don't know about nesting. I don't know if I've ever actually seen one.
Can't say I've ever seen one.
I've seen one buzzard nest, and it was on Yuseppa, and they took over an old osprey nest, but I have never, ever seen a buzzard nesting in the wild. Other
no.
than on Yuseppa Island.
I can't either. RJ,
crazy.
you're an old sports writer, outdoor writer. You know, you've been in the outdoor thing a long time. All right. Buzzards, what's up? Why are
years
they
ago when I had a farmette with chickens and things like that.
A farmette.
Like anything under 5 acres is a farmette. And a young buzzard got caught in one of the fences, and we got him out of the fence, and he decided to adopt us. Mm-hmm. And like Robert, I almost never saw him fly. He walked everywhere, or hopped. They hopped. And he would follow me around when I was feeding the chickens. And as far as being smart was concerned, that little bugger would figure out how to open up the thing that the chicken feed was in. He'd be able to open the latch, pop the top open, and I'd find him an hour or two later lying on his back, you know, completely full of chicken feed. One smart bird.
So I'm really not, maybe not that far off with thinking that they're actually I mean, I know they're ugly and weird, but they may actually be smarter than, like, the average bird out there.
Well, I think, you know, they're kind of like parrots on that level of smartness. They figure things out really quick. He knew what was safe and what wasn't safe, and this was a young bird. You know, when he finally was mature, he took off, but it was
now,
just kind of interesting.
All the things I was going to think about, I'm thinking of RJ with his outdoor experience, been around a lot, having a pet vulture was not in what I was really kind of getting at.
Right. And the other thing I learned is there's two types of
vultures. I'm learning about you every day, man.
Yeah, well, I'm the vulture king.
Okay.
In fact, we named him Rupert Murdoch.
Nice. But talk about vultures.
There's two types of vultures. There's the turkey vulture.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Redhead.
And when they're younger, they all have black heads. And then there's the black vulture. And this guy was a black vulture. Smaller.
Right.
Shorter tail, but much more aggressive, they say, than the turkey vultures are.
All right. So, anyway.
My question is why do they like to tear plastic and rubber, especially like molding and windshield wipers on vehicles?
Oh, well, I don't know that one either, but he did that to one of our cars.
Because you go up to Myakka State Park.
He walked off with the wipers.
Well,
Myakka State Park actually has a sign right there by their boat ramp that caution of your vehicles because the vultures will wreck them. And I've seen them literally tearing the rubber molding around the windshield and taking the windshield wiper pieces off.
That's an easy explanation, Robert, because if they take the windshield wipers off, you can't see very good and you run over animals and then they eat them.
Smart
so
birds.
Like so job security.
They're really smart.
This is
job
how they
security.
Get their food.
Nice.
I don't know why I wanted to talk about vultures.
It is a fishing show, right?
Yeah, well, but the buzzards, they're just cool because I go out and I see them all the time driving while I'm on the boat. It's kind of a tie-in.
Well,
but I've never heard anybody ask about them.
They cleaned up the beaches with some of the
tide.
Yeah,
the red tide.
Anything passes away, whether it's a fish or a mammal, they are definitely the vacuum cleaners.
They're the janitors.
Yeah.
They clean up.
And they eat everything, right? Bones, hair, feathers.
Yeah, but you know what? Have you ever seen another buzzard eating another buzzard?
Nope.
No.
You'll see dead buzzards on the side of the road. You'd be darned if you're going to see other buzzards around it eating it. Kind of strange.
Yeah, professional courtesy, I guess.
I guess.
It's kind of like lawyers. Okay.
There you go. No skid marks. No.
Yeah. What's the difference between when you see roadkill or when you see a lawyer on the side of the road? Roadkill's got skid marks in front of
it. That's right.
Okay. All right. Tarpon. What's up with the tarpon?
They've been moving around quite a bit. There's a bunch in Boca Grande Pass.
Yes,
there's been some on the beaches. One gentleman saw a big bunch of fish out there at the Power Pole Reef the other day. And then they're starting to see them moving up on the river, like around the 41 Bridge. A couple reports at El Jobin and a couple reports up above, like the Harbor Heights area up to the Navigator. A couple guys have been seeing them rolling around up there. And in addition to that, between the 41 Bridge and up through Harbor Heights, there's a bunch of gar heading upriver, too, because they're trying to get
back to
the fresh
water. Well, the river in Arcadia is down to a little over 2 feet, like 2 1/3. I mean, it's like 2'4" or something like that. So there's 300 cubic feet a second coming down, which we need pretty much 600 to 800 cubic feet a second to protect us against red tide, because red tide is killed by fresh water. It's the only thing we know that kills, you know, red tide is fresh water. But, so we're real danger. Now, I'm seeing there's big storms coming across. We don't actually need rain here, but we need rain north on the river, you know, from I-4, that 50 miles south of I-4. You know, if it would go across that section, that would bring us water. Tarpon going up river this time of year, gar's moving back up. I wonder what, if we actually went up there this winter, maybe, because we can't figure out what happens to the redfish each year. For the last few years, we've been laughing about the redfish going into this hole in the space-time continuum, spending the winter in a different reality, you know, universe, and then they come back again. So they're
right.
Like 6 months they're around, and then 6 months they just vanish.
Right.
And people say, well, how far could they go? I like calculator science. I mean, I'm into calculator science. So let's say redfish travels leisurely pace. If you're walking, you know, just say, you know, down the side of the road, you're 1.5 miles, 2 miles an hour. And that's not pushing yourself. Walking at 3 or 4 miles an hour actually is kind of strenuous, 3, 4 miles an hour. But at 1.5, 2 miles an hour, that's pretty much a stroll. And a redfish can easily attain that. So at 2 miles an hour, how far can he go in half an hour? 1 mile. How far can he go in 2 hours? 4 miles. If they swam for 10 hours, that's literally 20 miles, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so, they can cover some serious distance quickly.
And they don't have anything else to do besides swim and sleep and eat and fornicate. You know, that's pretty much the whole existence. So it's very likely that they could swim in one direction for 8 or 10 hours without really, during a 24-hour period.
Yeah. No, it's very feasible. You know, and I think,
considering they would probably sleep 6-8 hours during the day like a person would. 4 to 8 hours.
Right, but I don't know if they sit perfectly still for that or if they can still keep going mobile the way dolphin or sharks
can. No, they only have a single brain, so they would have to actually lay there and sleep.
Well, all those animals have a single brain. They just have the ability to shut one side off over the other.
Dolphins will shut down the left side of their brain and let the right side sleep and then shut down the right side and let the left side sleep.
But that's still only one brain.
But a lot of the sharks and the other animals you're talking about, if they don't do that, they have another brain at the base of their brain that keeps the basic motor functions going.
The central
nervous
system.
Makes them breathe and swim and all that.
Kind of like we do.
Yeah, the redfish, like most people driving down I-75, they shut their main brain off and they're using their secondary one.
That's most drivers.
Yeah. It's scary out there. But redfish would actually lay still and sleep, just like a snook and most other species. Very few creatures outside of sharks and a couple other ones can actually. Dolphins, because they breathe air, they have one side of their brain has to be awake 24 hours a day, or they're going to drown.
Right. No, that's true.
So they could just lay up and sleep. But even if they sleep 8 hours out of 24, that still leaves a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, this is going back 20 years ago, but the redfish, I believe, had the record for the longest distance traveled in the shortest amount of time of being recaptured after a tagging was done. And it was almost 2,000 miles in like a month.
Okay.
It was pretty significant because the fish was tagged somewhere on the Gulf side and it was caught up above the Carolinas. Or in the Carolinas.
I remember that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't remember the specifics, but yeah, now that you bring it up,
I can't remember the exact detail, but I mean, it was 1,600 miles, 2,000 miles, whatever it was in
over 1,000 miles.
It was ridiculous in the short amount of time.
Yeah.
All right. So these redfish could literally go anywhere.
Absolutely.
And they usually start to vanish around November. Somewhere in November, December, and by January, all of the captains and everybody's complaining, there's no redfish here, they're all gone, they're all dead, and they're whining about everything. It's like they're environmental green shirt weirdos. And then all of a sudden, you know, summertime comes, and there's all the redfish you could ever want. They go, oh, well, there's redfish here. And it's, I don't know, it's social media science. Everything's great. Everything's horrible. Everything's great. Everything's horrible. Why? Well, I don't know. I don't remember because that was more than, you know, 2 posts ago.
Right.
Well, it's got to be true if it's on Facebook or one of the social media.
More than 30 seconds ago, the attention span of a gnat.
What we want to do is, the reason I'm kind of bringing that up is, we're going to, on Fish and Franks, we kind of do, we have history pages, but I actually want this year to try and see if we can record where some of these pods of fish are from now till next spring and see what actually happens with that. Because I know we've got a school of redfish that's working east side. We had 2 or 3. There's been some by the Indian Field, some down by St. James City and just north of there. There's there's been a lot of redfish, and right now they're scattered all through the harbor. You can go out and you will probably catch redfish right now if you go out on the east side of the harbor or the west side of the harbor.
Oh, absolutely. You know, if you just work the bushes real slow and meticulous, there shouldn't be any reason why during a course of, say, 5 hours of fishing, you shouldn't catch anywhere from 2 to 10 redfish.
Yeah, you should be able to go out and catch redfish right now.
Yeah.
So while you're doing this, kind of keep track in your own head or even email me and let me know. But we want to start trying to do our own tracking thing to find out what's happening with the redfish. Because everybody's saying, oh, we don't have any redfish. And that's garbage. We have millions of redfish, literally millions. But we don't know where they're going. And we don't know if it's way back up in islands during the summer or during the winter to get away from the boaters. Or maybe they're just leaving the whole area entirely. Maybe they're going out in the Gulf or something.
Yeah, there's a very good possibility. I mean, it's hard to say where they go, but, I mean, the harbor's a large area.
Yeah, it's big. Charlotte Harbor's a monster. All right, going into freshwater right now. Morris, you've been bumming around the state. You're doing some charters this last week. Where'd you go?
We fished Lake Jackson in Sebring this week.
You're up in Sebring, Florida.
Really nice lake. Very clear water. Easy access off of Veterans Beach. There's a nice boat ramp there in downtown Sebring. Clear water, deep water, which is something you don't get to fish too often.
How
in
deep
Florida.
Is that?
20, 25 feet.
Well, that's pretty deep.
Yeah, these are all lakes in Highland County, so, you know, they're basically in hilly country, Florida-wise hilly anyway. And
well, north of I-4, you get in the hills.
Yeah.
The south doesn't actually start till you get north of I-4.
Right.
You know, what people think of as the south. We're actually too far south to be in the south.
Yeah, correct, because we're infiltrated. But long story short, the guys wanted to fish artificial, so we tried a various amount of things, and I told them we needed to fish deep water because the water was still warm. It hadn't cooled yet. So we went out in deep water, and the guy says, well, we're not really into fishing plastic worms. I said, well, I've got a bait. I didn't intend to fish worms here. And Berkeley's got this new crankbait, deep diving crankbait called the Dredger, and they make it in a 20 and they make it in a 25. We chose the 20 because we're anywhere from 19 to 22 feet, 23 feet. So we put those on 20 pound mono, just tied direct and nice long casts, and we were fishing little drop offs and ledges and rock piles in 20 feet. And we caught 16 nice bass, usually 20-inch bass down to about 15-inch bass.
So with the crankbaits in that deep water, you were looking at 5-pound bass, 6?
3 to almost 4 pounds.
3 or 4 pounds, okay.
Yeah, and if we would have used, you know, large plastic worms or live bait, we could have caught, you know, larger bass. There are larger bass there to be caught. But these areas that drop off in these deeper lakes, especially in the Sebring Lake Placid area, they hold shad year-round. And where there's shad, you're going to find bass eating them. And these Berkeley dredgers are a spitting image of a shad. I mean, it's just amazing. And the hooks, I can't say enough about the hooks. The hooks are lethal sharp, and they don't straighten out. You know, it's important to throw these things on mono and not braid, because when you do hook a fish on it, and if it's a big one especially, the braid has no stretch, whereas the mono has stretch, and you don't tear hooks out so easy with it.
So you were throwing them with monofilament?
20-pound mono, and these things are getting all the way down to the bottom in 20 feet of water.
Now, those are the ones in those boxes up against the front window, Robert.
Yeah.
Right.
Down on the bottom there, the Berkeley dredge.
Right.
And we have the dredge, and I forget the other ones that are in there. We've got several different ones in those boxes. They eventually will be on the lure walls, but right now they're in boxes up in the front window, along with a bunch of gulp and some other stuff we got there. But these crankbaits, they've got a big lip on them. When you're looking at a lure and you want to know if it's going to be going deep or going shallow, let's say your lure was sitting perfectly horizontal and you're looking at the lip on it. If the lip went straight down 90 degrees, it's going to be very, very shallow, because with that lip going straight down from the lure, all vertical off the bottom, it's not pulling the lure under. The water's being caught, it pushes up against it. As the pressure builds, the lure will either go to the left and allow the water pressure to dissipate off the side, and then it'll try and come back straight. It'll grab the water. It'll go to the right, relieves the pressure, goes back straight, builds pressure, goes left, straight, pressure. And that's called a wake bait. They'll stay right at the surface, but it's just going to move the lure side to side. The more straight off the nose of the lure, the deeper that's going to go. Most lures are put at a 30 to 45 degree angle off the front of a lure to give you depth and side-to-side wiggle. But the more straight off the front of it it is, the deeper that lure will go. The more straight down it is, the shallower that lure will go. So if you're looking at a lure and it doesn't really have a depth mark on it, you can kind of get an idea of what it's going to be by its size and the angle, either straight forward to vertical straight down, on how deep that lure is going to go. Most lures, like, you know, go around 4 foot is the average. They're going to say 4 to 6, and if you keep your rod tip real low, you'll probably get a couple more feet out of it. Raise your rod tip up, it'll go a little shallower. But most lures with an average 30, 40 degree angle, about 4 foot divers. And that could be a little less, a little more, depending where you hold your rod tip, because the higher you hold your rod tip up, if you put your hands over your air point, hold that rod way up over your head, you're pulling the lure up as well as in. If you put your lure rod tip down to the water or in the water, obviously that's that much deeper the lure can go. So a lure that would normally travel 4 feet with your rod tip in a normal, say, 10 o'clock position, 5 feet off the water, if you put your rod tip to the water, it's going to get 2 to 3 more feet of depth. If you raise the rod tip all the way up, it's going to be 2 to 3 feet shallower.
Well, so, and it's also a learning curve with a lot of those diving lures. It doesn't matter if it's subsurface or a real deep diver, because with basically braid line being so much more popular nowadays, braid line has less water resistance as it's going through the water. So some of these lures, you can actually get them to dive unintentionally an extra couple inches to even a couple feet in some instances.
Just because there's less resistance from the line. The braid's a lot thinner, doesn't act as much like a parachute, allows the lure to go deeper. All right, trout fishing. Where is the trout right now?
The best place I've been hearing about with consistency with larger legal size fish has been mostly like Turtle Bay, Bull Bay, all the backside of Boca Grande and Whidden Creek area. Been starting to get a few more reports down in Pine Island Sound and, of course, on the east wall. But the east wall, you're working hard at it to find legal fish. If you do, they're just barely legal. They're like that 15, maybe 16-inch
range. I've heard guys catching 30 to 50 trout in a matter of just a few hours.
Right, but most of them are in that 12 to 15-inch range. They're still small fish, and they still aren't bunched up real tight yet. You know, they're in little loose groups. But those bigger trout are definitely doing a little bit better. And last weekend when we had that front come through, it blew a lot of water out. So some of the guys that were willing to take a pounding to get to, like, bull or turtle, they were fishing in an aquarium because those fish couldn't go anywhere. They were stuck in those deeper troughs. And that's where you were hearing some of those 50, 60 fish days for, like, 3 days in a row.
Gotcha. All right. Gulf of Mexico, what's going on out there?
This is starting to get really good out there, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, from a mile to 20 miles out, you've got Spanish mackerel, ladyfish. There's been an incidental bonita here and there, you know, within 20 miles, but most of your big bonita schools that I've been hearing about have been 25 to 35 miles out. A couple blackfins mixed in with them. But the kings are the big thing. The kings are starting to move around a little bit, getting some good reports of bigger kings just north of us, like Venice, Sarasota, starting to really see good numbers, but we're starting to see a few here in the 20 to 30 inch range. But any day now, we're going to start hearing a more consistent numbers of those bigger kingfish just off the beach. And I know this is kind of Morris's specialty with some of that stuff.
Well, Morris, what would you do right now if you were going out in the Gulf, and would you troll, bottom fish? Give us an idea of what you would do out there and how you do it.
Well, traditionally most people go out and bottom fish for grouper and snapper and amberjack in the Gulf. And this time of year, September and October, and even the 1st of November when the water temperatures are still warm, are terrific for the trolling species, which we consider kingfish to be. My suggestion would be
if you're going to go and do grouper and snapper fishing, put a few live baits like a cigar minnow or a sardine or a blue runner. Float a few of them out on a balloon or free line. While you're doing your bottom fishing, you know, I've had really good reports this week of captains that were out offshore with their customers. They're bottom fishing for snapper and grouper, and they're floating baits out, and they're catching some really nice mahis. I mean, 6 to 7 pound mahis, which is a little better than your average schoolie. And they're catching blackfin tunas and kingfish, and a couple sailfish have been hooked and jump off. That's probably due to, you know, angler error and fighting them like they're a grouper, but, you know, those kind of things. You can catch all of those species right here off our coast if you just put a bait out for them. So be versatile. You're going to be chumming right, for
now,
snapper.
Here's the only thing I've got about that. You said put a cigar minnow out or a sardine or something like that. How are you going to get them? Where are you going to get these things? They're not available in bait shops.
No.
There's nowhere you can buy these on this coast. On the East Coast, some of the bigger marinas have guys going out, and they charge like $50 a dozen for them. But we don't have that here. How would you go about finding that bait or getting that bait?
You go to your local Fish and Franks, and you buy the sabiki rig, a little string of gold hooks with a little piece of mylar fly tied onto it. Multiple brands are available. Size 8, size 6, those are your two sizes for the bait fish that you want to use out here. You buy those, you take your spinning tackle, you put it on a lighter spinning tackle with a 1 ounce sinker, you go out in the Gulf, you see the schools on top, and you just toss it in there and start reeling them in. They bite it, you catch 4, 5, 6 at a time sometime. If you don't see them on top, just drop it to the bottom. You'll catch every bait you're going to use all day long. You'll catch squirrel fish, sardines, pinfish, grunts, blue runners, cigar minnows. You'll catch them if you just bounce this thing on the bottom.
Yeah, and do you have a particular brand or color? Because I know, like, for me, on my sabiki rigs, I'm not favored towards a brand or a cheap one, but I always make sure I take one that's got a green bead and one that's got a red bead, and there's a couple of them that have both a green bead and a red bead on them, because it seems like there's certain times where those bait fish get a little picky about that. I don't know if you have that same situation or not.
Yeah, you guys actually sell one in the store that has a green epoxy dot right on the top of the hook.
Right.
And I prefer that one over the bead, because the bead on the sabiki rig will actually travel away from the hook.
Okay.
And then you'll have the bait fish actually biting up where there isn't a hook.
You want to know what you're going to love? I hope. Because we just got them in. We don't even have them out of the packages yet. They're still in one of the, you know, 150 big cartons of stuff with 50 things inside that carton. We're getting through them. We're getting them up on the walls. VMC has a octopus hook with the epoxy bead on the shank of the hook so that your bait can't go back and hook itself.
That's a great idea.
And I bought all the sizes they had. They just came out with it. But you've got your hook, and we sell these little plastic rubber kind of beads that you can put on there. You put it just around past the bottom, because sometimes when you have a bait fish on, the hook actually slides through the bait fish and hooks and back into the fish itself. So when a fish bites, he gets hold of the bait fish but never gets the point of the hook.
That's right.
These are self-adjust. I mean, they're already done. You don't have to mess with them. You just tie them on the hook, put your bait fish on, and you won't foul hook the bait.
That's good.
It would just be impossible.
I love it already, and I haven't even seen it.
I don't know how much they cost. I saw them in the book. Went, I want them. So I didn't even look at the price, so I don't know what they are. But because it's a VMC, I'm going to think it's very reasonable. I'm going to say, let's say between $2.50 and $4 somewhere is be where I'd guess the retail price would be. So most of them are like $2.99 or somewhere in that range.
Yeah, but relatively speaking, they're inexpensive, very good hooks.
Well, they're not like some of the crazy ones, and they're not like, we still have some for like $1, $1.25 for a bag of hooks. They're not that cheap, but they're not like some of the nuts ones that are, what, $10, $12 for hooks?
Yeah.
$2 a hook.
Yeah, $2 a hook. No, these are, say for 2018, fairly reasonable. VMC is very reasonable.
Yeah, before we came up here, I was talking with a customer in the shop, and he was asking me about bottom fishing, and you know, you said, well, I use a sliding sinker and a red bead in between it and the swivel on my leader.
And I said, you're just letting the swivel or the bead slide up the line? And he says, yeah. And I said, well, I said, how often do you get clipped off by something that likes to, with teeth, striking the red bead that slides up your line? He says, how did you know?
Yeah.
He says, twice, last trip. And I said, okay. Now, here's the trick. Don't let that bead slide up your line. Take that bead off and tie it direct. You don't need a bead on it. You should use a stop sinker. So the guy was, he was ecstatic. It was like the light switch turned on. He was, oh, of course, of course. So anyway, yeah. The beads can be bad when they slide up your line because they're attracting attention away from the hook.
Yeah. You always got to watch that. For some reason or another, that became real popular back in especially the 70s. In the 1970s, that whole, you got to have beads on here and you got to do this and got to do that. The bead thing went crazy, and it carried over through the 80s, but by the end of the 80s, it was kind of dying off, but it really came into big play in the 70s. A lot of the stuff, the fishing tackle, really got kind of big in the late 50s, because that's when they added silicone to rubber, and real rubber, and that made it softer. You could actually shape lures with it. You could get softer action out of it. It was adding the silicone to the natural rubber that actually made it usable as fishing lures, because real rubber is actually very hard. Mm-hmm. It's not soft and mushy and wiggly. It's actually pretty tough. So by putting the silicone in with these rubbers, that actually brought on the lure thing, and that was in the mid-late 50s they started doing that. So the 60s brought on a craze of, like, shad body lures and stuff like that. But it really, in the 1960s, they started flat-pouring plastic worms and soft baits like that. There was a little bit of it before that, but it really came exploding in the 60s. Kind of like, RJ, do you remember that thing? And it was a kid's toy, a hot plate. And you would take this goop and you would put it in, get spiders and dinosaurs.
Yes.
Creepy crawlers.
Creepy crawlers. Yes.
You could literally make your own lures with that thing.
I did.
Awesome.
Well, yeah, and I did too. It was a great thing. We used to take the hook and put it in there, and
yeah,
you know, we were like the forerunners of modern lure making.
When you look at the man's jelly worm, the original one of the best selling worms of all time. It had a flat side on it. That's because it was made in that same style.
Made in the same lure.
Yeah, because all those, you took a little card and scraped them flat. You put your little tube bottle, filled it up with the goo, turned the heat on. Why they would give kids, I mean, we were little, and we had these ovens and hot plates, I mean, that literally would burn the snot out of you. But I guess we were way smarter than the kids now, because if you got burned, you kept your finger away from it.
Yeah, yeah.
It was that simple. Oh, that hurt. I'm not doing that again.
Yeah.
This was before snowflakes.
It was learned behavior. It actually worked very well.
Yeah.
And to go back to the sabiki rigs, I used to make them with a glue gun. And I'd get... And I never
with
used,
what?
With a glue gun.
Oh, gotcha.
And I never used the green. I used to take the hook and tie it all up, get it all nice, and lay it out on the table, and I put a spot of glue at the eye hole of each hook, and that was my bead. Mm-hmm. And that seemed to work really well for me too, to do that.
Yeah, and it does. It's one of those things that it's funny that some years or some weeks, it just seems like the bait switches over from one color to another. I mean, several years ago, and this was going back probably 10 years ago, during tarpon season, thread fins are very hard to catch in a cast net, but sabiki in them is pretty easy. About 10 years ago, there was that whole summer where the threadies would only hit that one red-hooked sabiki.
Right.
You know, and it's the only time I've ever seen that selling gimmick where it actually wasn't mm-hmm. a gimmick. It actually worked. I mean, you would catch 10 times more on that red hook than you would on a gold or silver hook sabiki.
Right.
And now they won't hardly touch it.
Now they won't touch it at all.
And my guess is it may be that this is fish roe that they're figuring that it is, and there's different colors of fish eggs at any particular time of the year.
Could quite well
be. And so they might be, well, you know, we're eating the red roe today, and what's this green stuff? We're not interested in it. So,
you know, when I was a kid,
for a guy who hooks up his electroshock things to unusual places, he's pretty smart.
Well, that stimulation's working.
Is that what
that's
it
right,
is?
Yeah,
that's got the brain fired up.
Got the brain going.
Either
now,
the first or secondary one or the other.
Yeah, when I'm twitching back here, boys, you know it's part of the cycle.
Yeah, but when he smiles and twitches, that's when we worry.
Yeah, that's.
All right, so anyway, where were we?
I don't know. Squirrel,
we were talking
right after Sabiki's.
All right. I want to drop back for a minute. Freshwater fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Around the area, Charlotte County, Sarasota County, DeSoto. Any good reports? Anybody? Morris?
Yeah, fish the river. I mean, the Peace River, up in the freshwater ends of it. Right now is when you go up in there and you can catch bass on top water. You can catch them on plastic worms. Swim baits, you can catch them on anything you throw, basically.
Now, do you like a Zaraspook style? You prefer a popper, jitterbug, buzzbait? What do you feel is the top way to go on top waters?
In the Peace River, I would take a spook, and one of the premium colors up there is going to be that gold one with orange belly or a Zip and Ziggy. You sell them in a store, owner makes them.
Or the Skitter V from Rapala.
Skitter
that thing's
V is
awesome.
Excellent.
We got a gold one in that, and that's a super one to work.
It's really tough to just beat the standard Rapala, you know, the old school Rapala.
Skitter Walk.
Yeah.
You mean the lure?
The old
originals.
The old Uri Rapala.
Yeah.
You know, the Finnish minnow. The
original minnow.
The original minnow, yeah. Those and black and silver, black and gold.
My favorite color up there is white and chartreuse. I've got more up there on white and chartreuse, but every time I tell somebody to do that, they never catch anything with it. I go up there, every fish in the world hits it. I sell them to customers, they get them on the black and silver.
Yeah, X-Rap, pink and white.
Oh,
the thing going on right now in the freshwater is that the water's dropping at an alarming rate.
77 degrees.
You know, temperature and water level, both. You know, so depending on which spot you're going to, you're going to find some pretty significant changes going on at every one of these ponds, ditches, stuff like that. But the weirdest part is, you guys are talking about colors. For the last 7 days, I'm guessing, 8 days, all the bass fishermen that have been coming in there have been buying white. They're buying the white in the fluke. They're buying the white in a paddle tail, a curl tail. They're buying the white frogs. These guys have all been on white this whole week, which is a little strange because I've never seen it where it's this consistent.
When you're talking about
water levels, in Florida we evaporate about 51 inches a year, sun evaporation, just, you know, normal evaporation from a lake is about 51 inches a year. So that's about 4 3/4 a month or about 1/4 inch a day. So you can have 4 to 5 inches in a month of water level drop, and even more if we don't get any cloud cover at all.
Absolutely.
But so when you go out the lake, you come back in 2 weeks, it could be 3 to 5 inches lower in just a couple of weeks. And that's what we're seeing right now, that water dropping in all these lakes. And we get a little bit of rain, we don't notice it, but it pops it back up. But in Florida, if we don't get any rain for a year, we lose 50 to 55 inches. I seem to remember 51 inches a year.
Yeah, most everything would be totally dry if we didn't get rain.
Yeah, we had that a few years ago where we had 2-year drought. We got a little tiny bit of rain here and there, but, I mean, picture 100 inches drop in water. Ollie Pond was dry. There were several of the lakes and ponds around that literally had a little tiny bit of water and mud in the middle of it, and that was it.
Lake Betty would be an awesome place to fish a topwater or a crankbait right now. I mean,
now, I like going, when I go to Lake Betty, the pier's okay, but I walk down where that canal comes in off to the left of the pier, just to the south of it, and there's that awesome corner, a cast catty corner across the other bank. I've caught a lot of bass there, but mostly on crankbaits. But that's mostly, it would be almost any time now, because we're going to get in that pre-spawn with this cooler weather going on. They're going to start feeding up to get ready to start, you know, building eggs and get ready to go start spawning and do the nesting thing. So right now would be a good time for little crankbaits.
Yeah, and you're talking about, you know, the pre-spawn mode going on right now. A lot of people who come down here, just moved down here, coming down for the wintertime, don't realize our bass spawn. They start spawning in November sometimes, But December and January is kind of the peak time when they spawn.
December and January, yes.
Yeah, that's...
You know, compared to up north, they're so used to it of May, yeah, June.
They start... December is the beginning of the spawn, and then February, March, April, all the bass are on the beds here. They're all, you know, putting the eggs out.
Right, yeah.
And it's weird to me because even, like, our deer here, you know, they go into their rut in
June. They go into rut in June, July, and August, yeah.
Which, up north, it's October, November.
Well, down here, they want to give birth during the cooler months when it's not so ungodly hot and storming.
Yeah, I mean, and I can see that, but it's still one of those kind of oddball things because you're so used to it everywhere else, a totally different factor.
Okay, and as a public service announcement, make sure you vote not to let Amendment 13 go through. When you go into the voting booths and you see this thing about the Greyhounds, yes, we all feel bad for the Greyhounds. It has nothing to do with the Greyhound, boys and girls. There's hidden language in that Amendment 13, and I don't know how they're wording it. I haven't seen it yet. I've read the amendment, but I don't know how it is on the ballot. What they are doing with this Amendment 13 is the language in there allows them to ban fishing, ban hunting. These people don't even like that you have a pet. Do you have a dog or a cat in your house? A fish, a gopher, a snake, a turtle? They don't like that you have that. They think that's cruel and unusual for you to keep a animal like that captive in your house. Think of all the money and the time you spend on your pets. And these people with this Amendment 13 do not want you to have that. They don't want animals on farms. They don't want people fishing, hunting. There is language in there that they can open up against all these things. We would all love to protect the Greyhounds. This whole Greyhound racing, I like watching it, but I never knew what happened to the dogs afterwards. It's heartbreaking. Do not let this go through. It is not about the Greyhounds. That's what they're using to sucker you in, play on your heartstrings. This is an eco-nut, green shirt. These are these horrible people that write bad stuff into what should be a good amendment. And this is a backdoor for them to come after all of us. And I'm not just talking about us who like to fish and hunt. I'm talking about you guys who have pets. You think I'm going off my rocker? Anything they think is inhumane treatment. Those words in there. Anything inhumane. This is broad-reaching. It's horrific that these eco-idiot jerks, environmentalists, nutcases would use this to go after people who have pets, people on farms, people who hunt and fish. This should be about helping people protect the Greyhounds, protect these dogs. That's what we would all love to do. I think that's an awesome thing. But these sneaky buggers have written in other language. Make sure Amendment 13 does not get through. I'm fishing, Frank, and I approve that message. Anyway, that's actually true, RJ. It is just a horrible, horrible thing when people hide underlying causes in what should be awesome amendments.
Well, and
really makes me mad.
The whole constitutional amendment process is a mess here in Florida. I mean, we have a constitutional amendment about keeping pigs on a leash. This is the type of stuff that's supposed to get done through legislation. If you want to ban greyhound racing, you can specifically ban greyhound racing with an act of the legislature. And so you elect people that are going to push that stuff through. A constitutional amendment, if this gets through, like you say, it's going to be hard. There's a couple of constitutional amendments that are on this ballot that are completely misleading.
And this
and how
is
the state Supreme Court lets these things through, I don't know, but they have.
All I can say is, wake up, do not let this Amendment 13 go through. This is the Trojan horse. This is the eco-idiot environmental... I mean, these are people are over the top, sick, stupid, and disgusted. Let's do a little calculator logic. There's 330 million people in the United States. 330 million. So that's a minimum of 660 million meals a day, probably 990 million meals a day. But let's just give it the benefit of the doubt. People are only eating twice a day, 660 million meals a day. Do you really think we are going to get that raising chickens in somebody's backyard? I'm sorry. The reality of this is we have a lot of people on this planet. We have to do some things that I'm really not fond of, but I want to eat every day. I want to be able to go to a grocery store, buy stuff. Farms are necessary. We cannot have free range everything. It's impossible. Figure 2 million eggs a day are being used in this country, or more. And you can't get that without some type of factory farming. It's horrible. It's a terrible thing, but it's reality. And unless we get, you know, let's say, oh, I don't know, 5 billion people in the world to commit suicide tomorrow, we need to do some unusual things to actually help survive on this planet without having to grow food in all our backyards all day. I personally don't want to grow food anymore. I'm too lazy. It's too hot.
It boils down to this is not about conservation or protection. It's about control, like it always is.
It's about their control over us. But getting back, we can control the fishing, the going fishing, and hopefully we can even control some of the catching aspect of this, as we've got a ton of fish around right now. We got sharks still around. We're still catching some sharks. 4 to 6 footers, I would say, out in the Gulf. Yeah. In the harbor, I'm going to say 2 to 4 footers.
Yeah, definitely. That's more realistic and inside.
Inside, but it's a pretty tough catch inside. We've had those two cold spells. I think a lot of the sharks are heading towards the Keys.
Yeah, they're thinning out significantly. The only saving grace of it has been those schools of Spanish mackerel and ladyfish out there. And now, once those start to thin out a little bit or spread out more, it's going to be real
slim. What's the primary species underneath the mackerel?
Most of them have been black tips and some small bull sharks. You know, but out along the beaches, as the kingfish migration comes through, you'll actually see some subadult hammerheads in that 5 to 7 foot range because they're notorious for following them schools. But your mullet are going through their spawn right now too. So fish are running offshore and up and down the coast, that'll start to bring in some of the sandbar sharks from offshore and even some of your other species from out in that little bit deeper water. They'll start to venture in closer to the beaches.
Okay. Morris, finalized thoughts of the afternoon day show here. If you're going to go out fishing, what's your best bet? What's your best advice?
If I'm going saltwater fishing right now, I'm going to go out and I'm going to take some bait, live sardines, and some shrimp, and I'm going to go out and hang a chum bag out. I'm going to catch snapper till I'm blue in the face, and I'm going to freeline some baits out while I'm at anchor and catch some blackfin tunas and kingfish and probably some mahis.
How many feet of water is that?
They were catching them in 60 to 70 feet of water.
So get out, anchor up, 60-some feet of water. You
hard
got
bottom.
Snappers, all that. RJ, any last words?
I'm really enjoying this neurostimulator.
I can tell, buddy. Robert, sum it up.
Go out and enjoy the next several days, but watch the weather this weekend because we've got a weird front that might stall out over us, and I don't know what the wind is supposed to do. So take advantage of either some freshwater or some saltwater fishing, but watch that weather pattern.
Okay, well, Fishing Frank here, the blind tarpon across me, Captain Morris Campbell, charter boat. Your phone number quick, Morris.
941-276-4478.
Go get him at Fishing Frank's. RJ over there, I'm over here, and we're all gone. See ya!
It's like Crabtree said. Sorry.